You say something?
Yeah. My part is from one based on formula, then goes down to cap C.
No. All part one.
All part one.
All part one.
Yeah.
All the way down to break.
All the way to break.
All the way over to here.
Over the next page where it says break question.
I'll leave up part two.
Up for 49 years.
That's right.
Part two.
That's right.
Which part is it?
Or.
Robert is making fish.
No.
Okay, let's get over to the field office.
Service center.
Swimming department, service center. Just what I said that this probably can be divided just in two parts. It's shorter, much shorter. Service centers, yeah. And part one would go from the introduction, you know, that we talked about, through the through Caesar CSO back, you know, the CSO background for the service centers, and the organization of the strike, and you know the way that Caesar and Dolores and Manuel organized in the beginning, and then just a very, you know, brief history of what has happened in the strike right up till today and the Gallo boycott. And that would be number one. And number two would take off from that and talk about the problems. The problems of the people. Well, first of all, the goodies, the services available at the service center that you think that people might be interested in, and also the broad issues in the community that the people might be interested in organizing to do something about, like the hospital situations, the transportation situations, legislation for older people and all that. Those are what I mean by the broad issues as distinguished from the individual services that are available to them to the service center. So that you see what I mean by those two divisions, the two divisions? The first gives the history and background. First division starts with the CSO service program. Well, it starts with the fact that the CSO has to build power. Put it this way, I've already given this to you, but the CSO had to build the voting power in order to pass the legislation to help the old timers, the pensiones, and the disability insurance for farm workers, and the aid to the children of dependent, the aid of the family of dependent children. Those three pieces of legislation, you know. And then Caesar's resignation from the CSO to begin working on with the farm workers, and then quickly just hitting the high points of his early organizing and Dolores' early organizing and so on, going on up through the strike and then finally into the boycott and the final rip-off and now the Gallo boycott. That's the end of the first part. Second part takes off from, since we've gone into the history, we've shown what has been happening. Now we're winning, and now the union is in a position again to resume the fight for justice for poor people, beginning with the old timers. And so that's why we're out talking to you people to see what you think about the idea of a poor people's union to, you know, begin to work on the overall issues and to provide services at the service center, and also to build an organization, a poor people's organization, if you want it. we'll be organizing for the next 2 months, talking to as many people as we can, and at the end of that time, we'll call everybody together and form a Poor People's Union if you want it. And now, in the meantime, you're more than welcome to come down, and we'll do our best to help you with the services that you need, and to begin to make plans with you for action later on some of the larger issues in the community. Now, what we need from you, and you know about that, trying to get some goodies, we need house meetings from you, and we need help on the Gallup boycott and so forth. That's what number two is. So what I want to do now is divide up the service center people between ones and twos. So if you just put up your hands for the service center. Okay, one, two, three.
Am I ready to step?
Wait a minute, Juan, you're not in the service center. One, two, three.
There is no three.
There's no three.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Two.
One, two, it's past my bedtime. One, two. One, two, one, two.
Two.
One, two.
Wait, you gotta get these out.
Yeah, am I one or two?
I don't have these down, too.
That's
I'm
all
two.
Right.
Polly is two.
How many did you get down?
Julie, one. Polly.
Oh, okay. Let's start over. Let's start over again.
It goes one, two, one, two.
Julie
one,
is one.
Two.
Your name and number, please.
Ophelia.
Ophelia, two. Okay.
Liz, one.
Liz, one. Tina, what are you?
Two.
Elena, what are you?
I think one.
Number one.
Nancy's the one.
And Polly was
the two.
Polly was my two.
Okay, what about Matt?
You started with you. You're a one.
I'm a one.
She's a two. One.
Wait a minute.
And Elena is a two.
No, I'm not a two.
I didn't count her. She turned out to be a two.
You're a two, Elena, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, you're a two.
How many ones?
There are five of each, except for
one.
If you count me, it's
okay.
So it's half and half.
Right. There's too many ones already, so you should do it too.
I don't know which one I knew about number two.
Huh?
Do you know my number two?
Yeah, you're number two, Minnie.
No, it's not on that. It's not on there.
You're number two, Minnie.
It's on the notes that I gave you.
Oh, okay. I'm number two.
No, they just gave it to you. About how long should the park be in the service center one?
Well, each part should be probably about, well,
5 weeks, except that makes 6 weeks.
As near to 10 minutes as possible.
That's a short house meeting.
Huh?
That'll be kind of a short house meeting.
Yeah.
Well, but see, we're cutting it short because we can only take 10 minutes before the TV, so we're tailoring this for the video. You'll actually talk longer than that when you get out there. You'll be more relaxed. Huh? Okay. Okay, now is everybody clear?
No.
Okay.
Ask everybody what they are.
Is that clear?
She's two.
What?
No, I think I'm two.
You don't know what two is?
No,
you
I don't
want to add a little clarification on two?
Could you? Okay, experience and the CSO, is that going to be mine?
No. That's one.
Your part's not even on there.
Yeah, first part.
No. Don't look at that. Look at your notes.
Sarah said it doesn't have enough.
First part is 6 minutes.
The notes that I gave you today.
Okay,
you already sat there and did the whole thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, you're going to want me to talk about the service center. What are we talking about today?
The services available for the older people at the service center.
Programs of
leading to asking them if they have any problems. You already brought this up, you know, and you did a very good job of it. And then, what kinds of other problems might the poor people might begin to work on, you know, like the overall broad issues of hospital care and, you know.
So it was the same thing we did earlier, the play acting thing.
Yeah, that's right, except that this time you're not starting out way back with, you aren't starting out way back with what happened in the CSO and the strike and, you know, the building of the union. That's number one. Everybody that has number one will be talking about that. The number twos will be talking about the goodies, encouraging the people to talk about their problems, and then talking about the overall issues, and then talking about the possibility of building a poor people's organization if the people want it. Plus, then, talking about the help that the older people can give to the union in return for what they get. Helping, you know, on the Gallo campaign. And,
so it should just be what's happening with the service center now, not the past.
That's right. That's what number two is. Number one is the past.
Are we just going to start writing in here?
Pardon me?
We're going to start.
Well, what I'd like to do is, what I want to do now is to break it up so that you'll have a little time to work on your sections tonight before you go to bed, and then if tomorrow morning before we, you know, before we break up into two groups, you have any questions, we'll go over them and then break up. What are you smiling about?
It's way past my bedtime.
Sort of breaking up. You go over, take a nap, and get up and work on your thing.
Like Caesar to wake me up when he gets up.
I can just see my.
This is very short.
Okay, let's see. On the first part, the person doing the first part will do it like we did our beginning today. Now, how will we start our second part? Will we start by just taking up where you left off?
Are you number two or number one?
Number two.
Oh.
Now, do I just take up where they left off, or do I have to start my meeting at the beginning?
No, you take up from where they left off.
Where
number one leaves off.
But it's the same, like we were at the same bus meeting or something.
Oh, yes.
Sat in rapping on our program.
Right.
And we're going to go through the whole thing, like introduce myself and pass around.
Wait a minute. What?
Are we going to go through it just exactly as if it was a house meeting, like introducing ourselves and passing around the list and that kind of thing?
Right. Number ones are.
Okay.
Yeah. The number ones in both groups. We'll do what we talked about tonight about, you know, getting the names of everybody, introducing yourself to the group, pretending like you're passing around the pad, and get names, address, cell phone number, and so forth.
Like you can just pretend like you stop this clock or something, and you're continuing or something.
Yeah.
The same thing me and Minnie did.
Or you stop for some questions. You stop for questions.
Okay, this is going to be you, though, right?
Pardon?
Imaginary. Like when you stop for questions, you pretend like somebody gave you a question?
No. The group is going to be asking you questions.
Oh.
We don't want to have a very long question period because this could go on and on. Because, you see, what we want to do, after each person has given his or her 10 minutes, then we want to have the group ask a few questions. Not too many, as I say. And then we want to have the group criticize each person and tell what they think was good about them, what was bad about them.
How many minutes on each part?
10.
How much time should you allow for questions?
Oh, I'd say not more than a couple of minutes. But on the criticism, that could go on for, you know, for several minutes.
I mean, in a regular house meeting situation.
Oh, well, it's wide open.
Whatever.
And that is The reason for that is that maybe people will be accumulating questions. That's what you're trying to get them to do, so they don't interrupt you as you're making your presentation. No, I just want to say that don't hesitate to ask any questions right now, because I don't want you to go away from here with a misunderstanding of what's wanted and do the wrong thing.
When you get down, give me number 4. Tell me that I have to go through all this. Give me thing.
That's right. In many ways, number 4 for the field offices, and number 2 and number 2 for the service centers are the most important parts. Because they do get into the gimme and that's the hustle. That's very important.
Well, we have a chance to switch, especially like, for example, on the service center, there's only 2 parts. We do, do one, and then we have time to go back to do the other one, so we get a chance to do both.
Well, yeah, but I doubt that we're going to have time, because what we want to do, you see, is to go through as much of this as possible tomorrow morning and start the video tomorrow afternoon, because the video will be coming up from L.A. Right after lunch, the way it's planned.
It's coming from L.A.?
Huh?
Somebody's coming from L.A.?
They're bringing the video machine up from L.A.
Fred, we're talking about the house being outlined, part number 1.
Uh-huh.
You should have scratched something out.
Yeah, the first part. We don't want to start with it.
Just scratch out part 8 completely.
What?
Scratch out part 8.
Right.
Start on me?
Yeah.
You mean you start on me then?
We have to have
you do your
this is just we're using this by way of an introduction. This actually is going to be any of you have any questions, you can stay behind and we'll talk about your questions. That's right.
You threw the baby machine free? Red? You want your song?
Yes, please. There are a few things that I neglected to mention that I want to discuss with you right now. They're just small things, but it's the small things that count so much, and there are a couple of no-nos. One of them is, don't ever make up answers to questions if you don't know the answer. Because, you know what happens. You get in the habit of making up answers pretty quick. Why everybody, you'll just be a liar to everybody, and you'll lose all your credibility and so on.
Yeah.
So just tell them that, that's a very good question, and I'll find out the answer and let you know. But don't just make up an answer. But of course, it's much better if you know the answer and can give it to them, because then you're building up your reputation among the people as an expert. Naturally, you're not going to know all the answers, though. But the sooner you learn most of them, the better. Because then they build up an awful lot of confidence in you, and that's the name of the song, you know.
One time I was listening to this boy give a presentation, and he said that the dues were, they asked him how much the dues were, and he said 10% of the salary.
Oh, tithing, huh? What a dreamer.
Did you correct him anything on the test? The teacher corrected him. He knew. He was a profile worker.
we corrected him. It was in a classroom. Yes. It was in a night school. The teacher corrected him right away. I was going, he knew it was a percent, but he didn't know how much.
Another thing is, don't ever assume anything. Don't ever assume that somebody else is going to do something just because they said they're going to do it. Or don't ever assume that something is going to happen just because somebody said it was going to happen. And you've got, naturally, you've got to delegate some responsibilities, some duties and so forth to other people. But don't ever assume that they're going to take those responsibilities or perform those duties. Just, you've got to keep on top of them all the time, or else it just is not going to happen. Or if it does happen, then you're real lucky. And that's the frosting on the cake when somebody does what he says he's going to do, or she does. I've had another that ties right in with this is leaving messages. For God's sake, don't ever leave any messages for anybody if you can possibly avoid it. Because those messages don't get delivered.
That's what you call passing the buck.
Yeah, right.
Right.
But the buck has already stopped with you. And you can't pass it along. You probably have done it yourself sometimes. You call up somebody, you're in a real hurry. You've got a lot of telephone calls to make. You call up and maybe the husband of the person that you're trying to get a hold of answers the phone. Just a simple thing like this. And you say, is Josefina there? And he said, yeah, just, oh, she's there. Well, no, don't call her the phone. I just wanted to just give her this message, you know. So you give him the message to give to her, and he goes back and sits down in front of the TV, and there's a shoot-em-up going on, and so that's the end of the message. When he gets through with it, he's forgotten all about giving Josefina the message, and she never gets the message. And it's very, just so exasperating. Right in the middle of strike situations sometimes, I've heard people give somebody else on the end of the line a message to give to somebody else. We've been right in the middle of an emergency, you know. And then later on, nothing happens, and then the one that gave the message say, well, why didn't you do that? What do you mean? Well, I didn't know anything about it. I left a message. Well, they're arguing about something. And that's what happens. Unless the person that you give the message to pass on, has got some kind of a vested interest in making sure that that message gets passed on. In other words, if that person to give the message to is going to get something out of it, then the shoot-em-ups and all that aren't going to get in the way. They're going to deliver the message because they're going to get something out of it themselves. Well, like a question of money, you tell somebody to give somebody a message about money that they are also going to get some of it if they deliver that message. Well, the message is going to get delivered. But otherwise, don't leave things that dangling out there, because that's where they'll stay, just dangling. I mean, 99 times out of 100, once in a while, you get surprised somebody will actually deliver a message for you. Another thing, at the house meeting itself, I forgot to mention this. You have one friend there. That friend's already helped you by holding a house meeting. That's the host or the hostess. But you're going to be trying to get other people to do things. You're going to be trying to get all of them to hold house meetings, all of them to become active in the boycott and in the union activities and whatnot. So it's very important for you to be, from the time you reach that house meeting, to be watching. Be watchful for the person that seems to be the most interested, whose eyes light up when you say things, and who seems to be really interested in what's going on, and who maybe makes contributions and of the right kind, not one of these blabbermouths that likes to do a lot of talking but no acting. But keep your eye out for that person, and then when you get to the point of going into the hustle at the end, when you're after the people. Call on that person first. You know, when you're trying to get a house meeting, well, how about you, Josefina? Well, that's the one you've been watching all the time, you know, and that person is the one that you have reason to believe is going to be more interested than any of the rest of them there in holding a house meeting or in doing some kind of work to help.
I remember something that happened to me, you know, at a house meeting. And I don't know, call it politics or call it whatever, you know. This guy was, you know, I'd already got through my presentation, or one-fourth of the presentation, and we had a good-sized group, and this guy pops up, he says, I'd like to say something. I said, well, I'm going to say something about what we're talking about, yeah? I invited a friend over to come over tonight, and he's going to come over and talk about some poverty program that we're going to start, and we want him to come over, and he's going to be here tonight. So before this meeting ends, you know, we'd like to have all of you stay here, and I'd like to explain to you what it's going to be about right now. It happened to me, and I just said, hey,
yeah,
you know, this is our meeting here.
Right.
Right. You know, you asked me, you know, before, as a courtesy, you know.
Yeah.
You don't come over here and take this meeting away, you know.
Right, right.
You want to go organize your own meeting, organize it at your own time.
Yeah.
Have the courtesy to at least tell me beforehand that you'd like to, you know, give somebody a message, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, you know, I felt kind of like that was kind of harsh, you know, but I said, look, man.
Yeah.
You just don't do those things.
Yeah, you have to do it.
What would you have done? I mean,
I would have done that.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, otherwise you just, as you say, you let him take the meeting away, and by the time he gets through, why, everybody wants to go home.
Yeah.
Instead of listening to you. The least he could do would be to wait until after you got all through with yours.
But that does happen.
Then they'll all be gone anyway.
You generally get people from other movements and other programs.
Right.
And before you know it, the meeting's lost, you know.
And those people from other movements and other programs are just the ones you don't want.
What happens if they ask permission? Can they come? You just tell them you've got your agenda all set up or something?
Well, if they ask if they can come and make a pitch, yeah, I tell them. No, we can't because people have to get up early and you know.
We just have so much time,
and we don't want to. And it's hard enough for them not to get confused about the things that I tell them. Now, if you come and tell them a lot of stuff on top of what I tell them, they're going to get our two things all mixed up and go away and pass a lot of chismes about what went on. They won't know what the hell we were talking about.
They're just going to act the next day. Well, I don't know what the hell they say, but there was a union guy and one guy from the Rural Poverty.
Right.
Center. I don't know.
I don't know which one was which, but.
Fred, what about hecklers? Are there apt to be any?
Once in a while, of course. The hecklers are usually, you know, the opposition, and they wouldn't be invited. Not if the people knew it. Now, if somebody came unannounced, just to disrupt that meeting. I would have the friend tell him to leave. So you can do it so much easier because he's your friend or she's your friend. And you can say, just get together with him right there before the meeting starts and say, look, this is going to be a big mess if we don't get rid of that guy. So you better tell him to leave. You didn't invite him. So tell him that he'll have to come back some other time when this meeting is this, especially for these people that are here.
But, Fred, one thing too is that, you know, like another thing that happens to me is that, you know, people generally bring their personal problems or their political problems to a meeting like that.
Mm-hmm.
And generally what the people want to do is just like, you know, let's get it over with. Let's confront him. And, you know, you already had, you know, like this particular meeting that SU, whatever you want to call it, RSU.
RU, Revolutionary Union.
They wanted to, you know, one of the organizers said, no, let's do it right before the meeting. I said, but you came such a long ways, you know, you're going to train these people how to do a house meeting. You know, I think it's not right that we take on this issue right now, because there's a lot of innocent people here that are totally unfamiliar with what's going on.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen, you're going to disrupt your whole, you know, procedure that's organized. We should save it to the end.
Yeah.
And she kind of felt like, well, that's wrong, because we should confront it right away. I said, no.
But you won.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yes, you have to. Because they aren't a bit interested in what your program is. The only thing they're interested in is in their program.
Yeah.
And if it hurts your program, they don't care.
See, I figured if that problem got out of hand, you know, it would just completely disrupt the whole meeting.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're right.
You know, Fred, one other thing, I mean, that we have to be careful, you know, like in the house meetings, you've got many of us, I mean, we're new on the movement, and at the, you got people who come to the meeting, you know, and they take away the meeting away from you.
That's right.
You know, and then the people start listening, that guy, instead of listening, you the one who conducting the meeting, mm-hmm. and this guy, he took the meeting away from you.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful with that, I mean, because you lose the...
That's right, and I think so much.
Let me
can make up real. Oh, go ahead.
Let me just have to say one other thing there. See, one other thing. I mean, many of us. I mean, we feel like offended people because we are in other people's houses. You know, but you cannot conduct a meeting. You know, when the television is on, and you know, we just don't have. You know, probably to say the guts. You know, tell them, you know, to have some courage. Even you could or cheer. He could turn you on the television off. You know, so we could have the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot run a meeting. And with the television on, especially, you know, at 7 o'clock, I mean, which is right now on Channel 34, which comes all the way to Modesto,
yeah.
and watching, you know, the La Historia, I don't know what the...
Day no more.
And Amorti, the cara de mujer, you know. And, it happened to me once last year, but...
¿Cómo sabes, Pablo?
Well, you know, because... the reason that I know, because, you see, we were conducting the meetings on Mondays at La Mont, and I think three times in a row, and we took to a vote. I mean, that we want to change it from Mondays to Thursdays.
Yeah.
And every time that we took it, I mean, we lost, and I didn't know why we lost. I mean, we want to take the Mondays off because we were working on Sundays,
yeah.
so we want to take the Mondays off.
Yeah.
But the reason that we lost is because it was a special novella on Thursdays,
yeah.
and people want to watch it. You know, and I never, you know.
Yeah.
Not later on. But it happened to me last year, we were conducting a meeting.
Yeah.
And I had to tell her to turn the television off because they were, for a while they looked at me, and then for a while they looked at the television, and everything was just gone.
So
yeah,
maybe Thursday night's not a good night to have a house meeting around here.
Pardon?
Nobody would come then to a house meeting on Thursday.
No, those novellas, I mean, they change from time to time, you know.
Oh.
That was just during that period.
Oh, I see.
Some people watch it at 4 o'clock, they're different novellas.
Well, I know what Caesar used to do. When it was time to start the meeting, well, he'd get up from his chair, the television would be on, everybody would be there. They'd be talking and so forth, and Caesar would just say, well, I guess we better get started, and he'd just walk over very casually.
Chair in front of the TV.
He didn't ask anybody or anything. Just, you know, if they're so rude that they're going to leave that television on during a meeting, well, then they're just going to have to take it, that's all. But on your other question that you had before, forget. Wait a minute, I'll forget his. But you remember yours. I'm getting old. I forget easy. But he brought up this question about... people that try to take the meeting away from you, and this is very important, but so much depends upon the way you're presenting the meeting. If you're going along in a very monotonous frame of voice, and then the Chinese came in, and then the Filipinos, and then the Mexicans, and so forth, and on and on like that, well, pretty quick somebody's going to take the meeting away from you, because they want to get on to the point. I've seen, we had somebody like that down in Los Angeles, who had a very good group of people at this house meeting. That's the way she was talking. And they couldn't wait. They just could not wait. So they said, yeah, well, I know about the Chinese and the Filipinos and the Japanese and all that. But, well, what are we going to do here? You know, let's get on. We want to get into action. You know, and whereas if she'd have made whatever she was saying exciting, they would have waited. But they couldn't. And then she tried to speed it up, but it was still slow. Yeah, but listen, what about this one and that? What are we going to do here at USC and so on? You know? So, so much depends upon the way you present it, your delivery and all the rest of it, and not letting any of these gaps take place and not letting the thing get so boring that somebody wants to come and save the meeting. That's what a lot of them do. Some of them just jump in because they think they ought to try and save the meeting that's going to hell. Of course, if it's a drunk, that's something else. You've got to get your You got to get your the host to just get rid of him, that's all. Get him out of there, because that just sabotages the meeting. He'll be, no matter how good you are and how dramatically you're, he gets all caught up and he starts, you know, blabbing and taking over and talking about things that don't have anything to do with it. So you got to get him out of there.
You mean all these things happen?
Oh yeah, they sure do.
Oh yeah. That's part of the meeting, you know.
Over in Salinas, you can't have a house meeting because they're all drunk all the time. A bunch of alcoholics over there, according to Robert.
Just have a beer while they're playing, Robert.
That's where the master's from. Damn, they're together because they're drunk all the time.
No, that's true, you know, people don't believe it, but that's what Sandy knows about the melon workers.
I have experience with melon workers.
With the melon workers?
Yeah, let me tell you. Every day, you know, Pablo. Every day, that beer's
got
to go.
Yeah.
Every day.
Well,
they might go a day without any food, but they can't go a day without any beer.
Yeah. Well, there must be some of them that aren't like that.
What if you take up a collection and then they don't have enough for their beer? What if you take up a collection before and then they won't have any money for their beer?
Just like
during the day when they're working in the melons, you know, and the truck driver pulls up, you know, so he works and load up his truck with melons. A lot of times, that truck driver doesn't have any beer on his truck. Hey, I'm on
no melons.
Next truck. On a,
who got the beer?
Yeah.
I have another question.
Uh-huh.
You know, what about kids?
What about kids at the house meeting?
Yeah.
Well, since you know the person, I think you can at least counsel with them and urge the person who at whose house you're having the meeting to to try and have somebody take care of the kids and keep them out of the meeting if they're going to be running back and forth all the time. And also then when people bring kids, if they do, maybe you could get them back into the same room with the kids that are already being taken care of. It's a problem. You can't ever solve it too satisfactorily. That some of the houses just don't have very many, hardly any other rooms to put the kids in. So that's where they are, right? And that's the only warm, in the wintertime, that'd be the only warm room in the house, maybe. So you just have to do the best you can and talk over the noise.
Probably with the meetings with the older folks, you won't have that problem because you're not children.
But sometimes those kids.
What about your own kids?
Huh?
What about your own kids? Because you don't have anybody to take care of them.
No, as I say, you just have to kind of talk over the noise.
There are probably phone calls, too, in the only room during the meeting.
Yeah, well, but if you haven't got anybody there that can answer the phone, like, what can you do?
You do like Ann does. Put yourself in the trailer where there ain't no phone.
What? Put yourself what?
Put yourself in the trailer where there isn't any phone.
Yeah. Another thing, at the house meeting itself, well, did I make that point clear about watching for the most interested person and laying the trip on that person first? Because you see, it's very important to win the first time. The first time you really go in there, you're trying to arouse them, you know, and you want to try to make the hit, make the connection right away. Because you're setting a precedent there with that first one. You get one person there to agree to hold a house meeting, then the rest of them feel kind of chicken and kind of sheepish if they don't also agree to hold a house meeting. So, but if you lose that, but you win, then, well, then they feel okay. If you lose that first one, well, then that sort of sets a precedent. Then some of the rest of them figure that, well, that person didn't agree to hold a house meeting or help, and so I'm not going to either. That person got by with it, and so can I. So try your best to watch that and then get that person, then it's much easier to get the rest of them to agree to do it. Another thing, say that you that there are people at the house meeting, and after you've got all through with your hustle, there are several of them that have refused for some reason or other to give in and hold a house meeting or become active or give money or whatever. And so, during, you've still got one more shot at them. Then the the Café Pan Dulce is brought in, you know. That's the meeting is all over, and so the hostess brings in. It's always good to have some coffee afterwards, because for a lot of reasons, it relaxes you and gets everybody in a relaxed, and you can talk and make friends, and plus the fact that you got this extra shot at the people who didn't agree. And you can, the organizers should become very mobile at that point and move around and talk to these various people who refuse for some reason or another to help. And, you know, just come around, you talk to them for a little bit and don't say anything about they're not helping, and then just sort of bring it out kind of casual. Oh, by the way, how come you seem like the kind of person that's really interested? How come you didn't want to help on this? And likely it's not here and there you're going to be able to win somebody else, and that's what you're there for.
You're always kind of like searching, you know, trying to find where that person kind of like fits into, mm-hmm. something that can get him started and get him right. involved. Huh?
Sure. Yeah.
Then of course character has a lot to do with it. Would you say that?
Oh yeah.
I mean, like when you come into the meeting, you know, you come in very stale, like.
Then they're all going to be stale.
Because, I mean, you get vibes from people, you know?
Yeah.
And people are that way.
Yeah.
And you come in, you know, like, you know, I noticed the Marin boycott girl came down. And she was, you know, like, you know, really like, you know, really happy. And, you know, how are you? And
yeah.
What's your name? And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of, like, opened up, you know. It was kind of, like, cool as it is.
Yeah. Of course, she had a good teacher there, you know, yeah. in Marin.
Neil Down.
Yeah, right.
Fred, uh-huh. What about, you know, like Salinas, you know, we have a lot of camps in those.
Yeah, what about?
Yeah, how we go about holding meetings.
In the camps? Well, what do you see as a big objection?
Let me hear the problems in the camps, uh-huh. okay? Maybe there are separate barracks, you know, not separate barracks, but separate, yeah, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And,
like a hall going down the middle and then right, rooms off the hall?
Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, sometimes you get invited, you know. Well, they'll invite you anyway, you know. Mm. 3 or 4 guys are there, you know. But then you got, like, cart playing over here, guys drinking over here, and you know, then you have all sorts of commotion,
yeah.
in and out, people going in and out.
Yeah.
Or they come in and they yell at us. And
yeah.
So, how do you go about it? Maybe, you know, I don't know, do you get some friends that work on the outside, you know, that don't live in the barracks? And
wherever possible. But I know that Caesar tells us in his early organizing period here during 1962 that he held meetings out in those barracks, and he had to put up with that sort of thing just to, you know, because he couldn't get anybody on the outside to, you know, that knew them. And so in that camp, and so he had to just go ahead and, you know, put up with the noise and so forth, and talk to 2 or 3 workers at a time. And that's about the best you can do. Unless they have a larger room in the middle there. But even that, the people be coming going past you while you're holding the meeting, so it's probably better to just keep it private and keep as, you know, and have a smaller meeting. It's about the best you can do. Another thing, on the money situation, there at the end when you're making the hustle for money, I think it's really important to get over the fact to the people, whether they're farm workers or old timers, that this money isn't going, you know, to feather somebody else's nest, like Fitzsimmons gets all this money from his people in the union and makes $125,000 a year. This money is all going to the farm workers. The money that you contribute is not going to go to some fat salary for Cesar Chavez. He gets $5 a week just like the rest of us do. Right? That's a good place to bring that in, you know. And that makes quite a bit of difference to people when they know that it's not going up there to pay a lot of fat salaries. And I think I mentioned, for God's sake, don't let them, during that period after the meeting, don't let them, during the meeting, don't let them serve anything but coffee or, you know, some like non-alcoholic beverage, because probably some of you that have held house meetings have seen the same thing I did. You forget to tell them about that ahead of time. And you go in there and, my God, here's the what do you call it? The
bar.
The bar, sort of, or the whatever. Loaded with bottles and ice and glasses and so forth, and they're all ready to move right into it as soon as the people start coming, and you tell them, okay, you know, I forgot to tell you, but we can't have a meeting if people are drinking.
That turns people off, too. Sometimes when they come to a meeting and they see that people are drinking and they're just goofing around, especially older people, they don't want to do that.
None of them.
Especially with families.
Yeah.
Even in the boycotts, one time we had one person that would have a weekly meeting, and I would try to bring older people or different people from the community, and they'd only come one meeting because before they even started the meeting, they start passing around to go bring the beer.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the people just get turned off.
That's right. Well, you see, the host, a lot of times, that's his experience. He invites people over, and that means beer or something else. And so he's not doing it, you know. He thinks he's doing the right thing, or she thinks she's doing the right thing by doing this. She thinks he's helping you by doing this. So you have to be a little careful about if it's already there, about the way you explain it. Really give an explanation in a calm way so that she can, or he can, put it away in the icebox or something until after the meeting is over.
Which is another good reason for being there early.
Oh, yeah. Sure. That's right. Otherwise, you come there already drinking.
What about having receipt books for the money?
Contributions.
Receipts.
Yeah. I haven't noticed in really doing that too much because it's usually change. But you give receipts for anything, even if it's only 50 cents or...
No. We used to give... If it was a big contribution, like $5 or $10,
yeah,
I always just take that person's name, you know, later or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I keep that aside, and when I get back to the office that day, I'd separate that sort of and say, please send this receipt to this person.
Yeah.
If it was a big one, if it was anything smaller than $5, you know,
yeah.
But if $5 or $10, I would make sure that we got a receipt.
Right then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can tell them right then.
Well, we'd send it to
you'll
them
get
later
a receipt.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you, well, of course, you're going to have your names on the pad, and you could just put the figure on there.
And any checks that we got automatically got receipts.
Oh, yeah. And then the fact that they signed the pledge, that's another type of receipt. You got that right there. Those are the main things that I wanted to bring up. Pablo, you mentioned earlier that when we got to talking about the house meeting that you wanted to bring some things up. Did you already bring them up? Anybody else want to bring up anything about the house meeting itself? Because that's what we want to go into now.
One other thing that I want to bring up, you know, like when you go in a house meeting, you know, even though that you know the people, you know, or you see them an hour or 2 hours ago, you know, some people there, it's good, you know, to stand up, you know, and shake hands, you know, everybody just coming in, you know, and always be alert, you know, people coming in, you know, and not ignore them, you know, when they walk in. And that really makes people feel good, you know, that when you stand up, you know, and shake hands with them, and ¿cómo está? ¿Qué tal de trabajo? ¿Qué tal de ti?
Yeah, that's right.
Sure does. That's the same sort of thing you can do in the service center. Automatically, you do that to make them feel welcome, like it's their home or their office or whatever. They can feel part of it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I used to notice in the old CSO service centers. Almost without fail, the service center workers who did that, who had a nice way about greeting the people when they came in, making them feel comfortable and welcome and so forth, were also the best workers. The others, well, it was just a job, you know. They were watching, when it got to be about 4 o'clock, they were watching that clock get out of there by 5 o'clock and so forth, and they wouldn't fight for the workers. I mean, you know, the workers would need something, welfare or someplace, and it had to be a battle to get it for them, and those workers wouldn't help, wouldn't fight. So they lost the argument. But you're absolutely right. That people who really make that effort do it because they like people, and they, you know, they want to make it feel welcome.
One other thing, I mean, let's get me for an example, you know. I do remember that, as 8 years of experience with union, you know, we have done good things and we have done bad things. I mean, we have to admit that to ourselves. You know, but I do remember the last year when
speak for yourself, Paolo.
I do remember the last year, I mean, when I started the house meetings, part of 73 and part of 74, you know, I mean, after the strike was suspended, I mean, for a while I was on my toes, you know, really, you know, and people saw me that I was going from house to house, you know, like during the day, also, I mean, like on the evenings, and we were conducting a house meeting. Many people who want to save me, no, they just couldn't have no house meetings. Probably against the will, they said yes, because they saw me that I was on my toes, you know. Yeah. And really, we had a number of house meetings in the army. And then after that, I mean, I failed somewhere, you know, along the line. And also people, you know, went down the drain, you know. But what I'm saying with that, I mean, is that you got to be on your toes, and people got to see that you're on your toes, you know. People seeing you sleeping, you know, until 10 o'clock, you know, and at the...
Yeah, they had a little history of that office. I remember. Yeah.
Well, 17 organizations, 17 right. Directors at that office.
Yeah.
I kind of think that, you know, whenever you go through, like, you know, and I've gone also through the motions of having house meetings in the past, and it can become a real problem that you go to those meetings and, you know, your whole intention is to really organize and try to find people. And, you know, along the way, you know, like Pablo says, you know, generally, you know, the danger point is that you may end up just being the only organizing and not organizing, you know. And that if that doesn't develop to where you begin to get people to take your job, to multiply that job.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, during the campaigns that we had here in Lamont, before Pablo came, you know, to that office there, we got other people, you know, familiar with the movement, and then picked out the most key people, or the guy who we thought was the best guy, kind of like brought him in and made him part of the, like, La Rosimo, you know, kind of like, there's another Pablo, you know, so going around town, you know, and that meant for more contacts and an expansion of the word and the message getting out. That's very important.
Well, of course, that's what we're going to be trying very, very hard to do, or else the whole thing isn't going to, only they aren't going to be just volunteers, they're going to be staff. You've got to get staff, because you can't, you know, you can depend on the people you're talking about off and on, but they really don't have, the union isn't first for them. They're just, you know, they're just helping once in a while, and so forth. Or even if it looks like they are going to be helping every day, something comes up in the family and they're just not there. Well, you know, that's not their responsibility. They're just, you know, doing it in addition to the other thing. So we do have to, but we have to, at least during the first couple of months, it's got to be a campaign. It's got to be a drive. Well, you can't carry on a campaign much longer than 2 or 3 months, because then it's not a campaign anymore. You're dead, and everybody, you know, it's. But during that time, you can accomplish an awful lot, even by yourself. Well, you can't accomplish anywhere near as much as needs to be accomplished. But by really getting in there and driving and keep, you know, and keep moving and moving, moving, like Alan and Pablo were saying, you can get over the idea to the people that this is a camp. They get caught up in the excitement of a campaign, you know, themselves, and then they spread the word. It makes the thing begin to ripple out, like when you throw a pebble in a little lake or something, the ripples start going out all through the community that something exciting is happening, something is being built here, and we want to be in on it, and so forth. Well, the campaign spirit doesn't last much longer than a couple of months. People get worn out. Then you got to get something else, some other campaign going. But if you have somebody that can that you can hire, I mean, take on as staff, which you've got to do, while you can just, you know, just increase the effectiveness of the thing by double, and if you can get three or four of them, well, you know what, how important that is. There was another point that got lost along the way.
Did you bring one about you, Jimmy? See, one of the experiences that I had, I mean, when I was working, before I came work for me, you know, the oil programs, I met a guy, I mean, who was afraid, you know, to, I don't know how to put it, but, you know, he always had problems, you know, with the people or the committee that he was working with, the leadership, you know. We had to realize, I mean, the amount of people with the people you're going to be working, I mean, they're going to be coming good people. People with fresh memory, you know, and new people, you know, which they might just come, you know, one step forward, you know, than you, you know, just coming ahead of you. And I remember with this guy, I mean, he was afraid of other people, you know. He always was scratching, you know, his stomach, his chest, you know, and just worrying about the guy, you know, or guys who was coming ahead of him. Finally, this other guy, I mean, he just wind up on the mentally retarded hospital in San Angelo, Texas. And I said that I think, I mean, should be worrying us, I mean, because we should be aware that on the communities, a lot of fresh or new blood, I mean, is going to come in, you know, with new ideas and, you know, just all the way, you know, that they're going to come down. I met a guy when I was in Selma, I met a guy, I mean, and I never was afraid of this guy. As a matter of fact, that I encouraged him to work for the union. That was Tony Lopez, who was the chairman of the Rich Committee for Guerrero. I mean, you know, that guy was a real good guy. I mean, I had a lot of respect for the guy. Every time that I went with the meetings, it was him, with the company. And I can understand about the tractors, you know, when they change gear, you know, which gear they go. But they would start, he started talking with the Rico about, you know, like 9,000 RPM and 12,000 RPM, and, you know. And every time that I used to go with this guy to the meetings, I never speak to him. And I have to admit that he knew more than I do about the whole contract, and it's not about the union. I liked the guy to come and work for the union. And I was never afraid of him, as a matter of fact, that I was encouraging him, you know, to come and work for the union.
Sure.
And I'm pretty sure that in the meetings where we're going to be working, it's going to be that kind of people.
Yeah, well, you're...
And I think that's the kind of people we're looking for, you know.
That's right, because, you see, you're just, if you don't, I mean, if you sort of resist bringing people in to work with you, you're killing yourself. You're killing your own program, and it's going to show up right away, you know, because other people in other offices are going to go zooming ahead, and it's going to show up on all the records and everything else. And here you are, and they're going zooming ahead because they've been able to take on other people. They've been able to find up more staff, and they're out, you know, just tearing through the community and really, you know, like gangbusters. And here you are with no staff, and you're way back here, and these other guys are way up there. So, you know, you're just, very obvious what's happening. The other thing I was trying to think of, though, was in reminding, remember I talked about making that a second reminder telephone call two nights before the meeting? Well, you are making a second reminder telephone call. So you are going to try and get the person who's the host or the hostess to do the same thing. Of course, maybe they haven't made any telephone calls yet, but assuming that they've already made the telephone calls or have contacted the people that they want to come, now you want them to contact them one more time, just the night before the meeting, or certainly the night of the meeting, either one. You're asking them to do the same thing that you're doing, you see. You're calling a second time. Actually, it's the third time because you've been out to see him in the meantime. But it pays off. Just as you're reminding the host a second time, you got to get the host or the hostess to do the same thing and make another series of telephone calls to remind those people to come. Otherwise, you probably get some there, but not anywhere near as many as if the second telephone call was made, because people aren't used to this. And they'll forget to come if they aren't reminded again. And if the, on the other hand, if the host or hostess waits and doesn't make that second telephone call, and you come, nobody's there, and you say, well, maybe you better call them again, you know. She said, I don't know why they aren't here. They all said they were going to come, and, you know, you've heard them say that. And you say, well, maybe you better call them again. And then she calls them again, and well, they're gone. They're off. They're doing something else, or else they're getting ready to do something else. Or else, well, it's too late, and they don't want to go out, and so forth. So call them to remind them to make the second telephone call.
That just reminds me a lot of political coffees.
Yeah, well, it isn't at all. Don't confuse the two.
I was thinking of
that's what happened to Father Boyle's campaign in San Francisco. His campaign manager confused the two.
Okay, what's the difference?
The difference is that in a coffee clutch, in a political campaign, what you're doing is exposing the candidate. You see, you've got coffee there, and then the candidate comes, and the people come to meet the candidate.
Right.
It's just a little education, then he talks.
The candidate.
That's right, and he talks and tells him, makes all of his big boasts and his big promises and all of the rest of that mess that he does. And then he goes on to the next one, you know, and the next one, the next one. But what they don't do, you see, is to really get their hooks into those people and get every single one of them involved in the campaign.
They try. They pass sheets around.
Oh yeah, but I mean, you know, what kind of an attempt is that? But for God's sake, that's a good idea. I'm glad you brought that up. Don't ever pass out sheets around a house meeting that said, "I will help. I will give money, or I will do this, or I will do that, and I'll do the other thing." Don't ever rely on that.
Yeah, I've seen those passed around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Or maybe one. So you've got. I can't emphasize the importance enough of nailing each one right in front of all the other people, and nailing it down, not on a piece of paper that they pass around. You know, that's what happens at these meetings, because that's about the only thing you can do at a union meeting or a church meeting or a school meeting or a community meeting or a club meeting or whatever, block meeting. You can't go from one to one to one to one. In the first place, you don't know their names. The second place, there's too many of them to do that, and they won't give you enough time to do it anyway. And that's not the right atmosphere to do it at a big meeting. So all you do is, well, you've got your sheet there, and you pass it around. Well, you know how many people you get out of those. You're lucky if you get any, but you usually do get some.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that when you go to the house meetings and you've got some leadership issues, leaflets, or whatever, if you have wishes to pass it out, I don't think it's a good idea to pass it out, you know, when you start the meeting.
No, it distracts your attention.
You lose the attention of people. People are going to be reading the material you gave them.
Right.
And you're going to be speaking by yourself, you know. And,
yeah.
I went to a Dick Gregory interview speaking at a, you know, big function, you know, 3,000 people. I don't know, some people came into the, you know, this thing,
uh-huh.
And they started like, you know, right, you could see them, they were passing out literature.
Yeah.
And he just looked at it and said, what's going on?
Yeah.
And everybody looked, well, you know, what's going on? What's going on?
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy's passing it. He said, I'm talking to you up there.
Yeah.
So, me? Yeah, he said, come here. Stop the whole thing right
yeah.
there. All the other guys are passing. We're in trouble. He comes down and says, okay, don't pass the papers until after I'm done.
Yeah.
Then you pass the papers.
Yeah, right. It's the only way.
That was it.
Sure.
Sure. Hey, you!
Yeah.
How
old are
you?
What?
Another
cold, you know what I mean? Cold, just like,
yeah.
Here he's got 3,000 people there, you know?
Yeah.
And I just stood like, you know, what a bunch of balls the guy had, you know? You figured, you know, he'd play it cool, you know?
Yeah.
You just, you know, like, he had command of the audience, you know? He wasn't going to let anybody else take over, you know?
And that's up.
And everybody started reading the papers, you know?
Right.
He noticed he was beginning to lose the meeting. Boom, just like that.
And that set the tone for the rest of the meeting, so people were quiet listening to him.
Sure.
Another thing there at the end of the house meeting, or toward the end, when you're putting the bite on them for the money, when you're putting the bite on for the money and the Tiographica and so on, don't do it all at once. Don't say, well, you can You can give pledges, and here are the pledges, and pass them around, and then we've got the Tiographico, and you get your untie your cellophane bag and dump all the Tiographico in the middle of the floor, and so here's this, and here, and then you can get, and here's a can if you want to give some money. You get it. People all confused. Do it one at a time, because you wind up getting a lot more if the people aren't confused. Any other questions?
To the service center meeting, we should take that Tiographico.
No,
the older people.
Sure. Sure.
Should we have it in our service centers?
Yeah.
No, not
that. We think that maybe by next month when we start, or maybe as soon as we get down back to our areas, we start house meetings. Maybe in another month we can get them on trial.
Well, why don't you all form a little delegation and go while you're here and go down and call on them all, huh? You did? Didn't do any good, huh?
I was selling 1,500 every 2 weeks, and then they went to monthly, so that made me sell, because I had deliveries, that made me sell 1,500 every month, so I was less than 200. So then I had to cut down because I was handling the service center, so I gave half my order to the wire cutters. Then finally, I'd get Spanish, they'd get English, they wouldn't get any, and I'd get some. So the last 3 months have been.
Well, have you gotten any word about the situation in the Mount Criado office?
They don't send us any notices or anything. We have to call in and
communicate. They're waiting for Pablo to apologize. When the last time they came down?
There's no communication.
It was Pablo's fault.
Wait. And when you see it at the beginning, then you call them. And you see what's happening.
Put that down on the list of.
Yeah.
Well, they got the printing machine problem, you know, and they said that nothing that they could do, you know, until January or February. And we have brought it, I mean, a number of times.
Well, this is nearly February.
Yeah. I'm still giving out the December issue.
See, I don't know, but one of our problems, you know, like especially, I'm pretty sure that the other directors feel the same way I do. I mean, you know, Spanish, but the others are in Spanish. So, you know, we got about 150 to 200, 150 to 200 left, you know, out of 600 in English. But how many farm workers, I mean, really, what is the percent of farm workers we need to know?
But you know what we do with the English? We go out to the supermarkets and sell it over there.
Yeah.
And up to the, you know, places where, you know, just anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, when I was working in the city, I sold mostly English. But now that I'm at the service center, we need mostly Spanish.